January 30, 2013. It's a Watt from Pedro show.
Thank you. that he would come along. If there's even one chance, take a drink, but a drink.
Pedro show. Hey, Brother Mac, hey, feeling better?
Back in action.
Yeah, you
way
had it.
Way more better than before.
Yeah, Brother Mac had the flu for how many? 8, 9, 10?
Good solid week.
Puking?
Not puking much, but just
fever?
Dead. Fever and pain, man.
Pain.
Totally.
Well, like a little womb child
sleeping, yeah.
Position?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah,
cradle.
Constantly.
Damn. Well.
It's over.
I'm glad, but you're better now, huh? And in fact, what was your comeback present?
Man, oh man.
You
I
saw the Who?
Great surprise Monday night. I got off work, took a little siesta, phone rang, didn't answer it. When I got up and checked the message, hey, you want to go see the Who? It's like, what Who? I said, I didn't know who.
The Two.
I didn't know who was happening. It's like, yeah, Quadrophenia, they're here in town. So that's where I was Monday night. That was fucking great. Man, oh man.
What pad?
At the Honda Center. Never been there before.
And where's that, downtown?
Angel Stadium, right next door.
Orange County?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Tomorrow night, they're at Staples.
Okay.
So, if you missed them, check them out.
They ain't calling Farewell Tour anymore. We did that for about a
minute. That's the real tomorrow night. This is an airing today, right?
Look, we got our guest.
Yeah.
He spoke.
Sorry, I interrupted.
Before he got his intro.
This will be up. By tonight.
It'll be up
tonight.
Oh, it
will?
Yeah. Yeah,
okay. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's our pleasure, me and Brother Matt, to have aboard Peter Show, Mr. David Yao.
Hi,
welcome.
Thanks a lot for having me. I'm honored.
And we played for you, starting off the show Up Against the Wall by John Coltrane. Then we had Contact Mike with Sawako and Seasick, something live from the Jesus Lizard at the Great, the Big Day Out in Auckland, 1995, where I was playing for Porno for Pyros.
Yeah.
And I got to play Scrabble with you and drink some beans.
That was awesome.
We played like a soccer stadium, right? It was a soccer stadium.
Yeah.
And out in the grass, and I think it had rained the day before. There was a lot of mud.
I think it had been raining for like 3 days.
Okay.
And I got a little tiny story about that particular show.
Okay.
As I was out on top of the crowd, you know, with a long mic cord and stuff, and at the time I was married, and my wedding ring got plucked off.
Donated.
Not intentionally, I don't think, but I looked back at the guys on stage. I was giving them the terminal, sort of like, stop song. And they stopped, and I said, hey.
Showbiz talk for like...
Yeah.
the hand across the throat.
And I said, hey, my wedding ring came off. And I thought, it's absolutely impossible with whatever. There's 20, 30,000 people there with a foot of mud. And moments later, this kid goes, I've got it!
Wow.
And it was the biggest roar from the crowd we got that day.
Wow,
it was really cool.
Yeah,
was
cat
really
found it.
Needle in
the
haystack.
Yeah, that was cool.
Wow.
Yeah, we had a good time. I was wearing a dress for Perry. I remember. It was my first time there. Was that your first time there, or had you already been?
That was my second time.
Second time.
I'm with one of your porno pals this week, huh?
Friday with Perk and Peter.
Yeah.
And Brother Wayne Kramer.
Wow.
We're going to make them do Stooges.
Cool.
We did it once before.
Wait, Wayne's playing with the porno?
No, this Friday's a gig in Santa Monica. What's it called?
Central?
Yeah. Something social. It used to be called 14 Below. And we did this once before last year. But this time with Peter DiStefano. Mm. last time was just a trio, and we did all Stooges. Brother Wayne Kramer doing Stooges. I think first time he ever tried doing them songs is live. Did okay, his own version, you know.
Careful through the hatch this time.
Yeah, that's right. Coming through the hatch, they got a lame ass back hatch here, and made no step for like a foot. And so I came through, and my arm caught that jam in the door and dislocated the elbow and turned purple and used. That was a bad one.
Ouch.
Ooh, that hurt. Ooh, that was a lot of pain. Itai. So that's what we're going to do. But that tour, that was the first time I worked for another man. I was Born for Pirates. I've done it 3 times. After that was Jay Maskus and uh-huh. Fog. And now for Stooges now, April's 10 years.
Has it been that long?
Longer than I was a Minuteman or anything.
Wow.
You can believe it. Side Mouse. And we're going back there. It'll be my 4th time with them there. But it isn't the big day off.
Right.
It's called, it's like blues festivals and things. With Beast of Bourbon, though, they were at one of the big day outs we did. You guys were so great at that festival. But I want to get into your
pants.
I want to get into your music journey, story of your musical journey. We'll play some music here and we'll get to that, okay?
Now I held you, and that's true. Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. We started off with Damn for All Time by Scratch Acid. Then Elizabeth Thien from Dirty Beaches. Manhattan from Cat Power. Hey Planet, The Planet Krypton from Petra Hage. She's got a new album. Yeah, it's all a cappella versions of movie soundtracks.
Oh, awesome.
And then Body and Soul by Milk Glass. Something they did in the old days, but never released.
For her album cover project.
She dresses up like all that shit. Even Jimmy Dean and shit. Cool. She wore a Superman one for that. And then finally, Owner's Lament by Scratch Acid. Scratch Acid. But ahead of Scratch Acid. Yeah, when were you first conscious of music?
How old music? Well, when I was a kid, I remember being in a high chair in the kitchen with my mom, and Blame It on the Bossa Nova was playing, and I didn't know what the hell it was about, but I felt like it was, and I wouldn't have known what Dirty was either, but I felt like it was somehow Dirty.
Okay.
And I think that's the earliest memory I have.
You were what, chowing in a chair?
What's that?
High chair?
Yeah, well, I was like maybe four.
Four?
Four or five.
What town?
Well, at the time, we were living in North Africa, in Tripoli.
Tripoli?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was in the Air Force, and we were stationed there. But then, the first music I ever really bought was Beatles 7 Inches and stuff like that.
Okay. So, you're more than conscious, you'd buy it.
Yeah, we'd get, you know.
So like 8 days a week.
Well, I remember singles.
No, it was like by the time Apple was by the time they had Apple.
But they still were econo, right? Like a buck for a single.
Oh yeah. I don't remember the price, but it was
Because I remember getting 7 inches when I was came Navy housing here in Pedro.
I remember my only buck. One of my best buddies. I'd go over to his house and listen to his little hi-fi, and his sister gave him a 7-inch because she didn't like it, and it was Sunshine Superman by Donovan. And I'm like, she doesn't like this. It's cool.
She didn't like it. Donovan's running joke in that Don't Look Back movie.
Yeah.
And finally Dylan meets him. You know about this movie?
It's
called Don't Look Back, and it's when he first did a tour of England as acoustic. Maybe 64, 63.
Oh, yes.
And the big running joke is Donovan. He's going to meet this guy, you know.
And he's supposed to be like the English Dylan.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then, well, he was popular, let's say that. But he played acoustic and sang. But they're at this party and they meet. And so someone gives Donovan the guitar. And, you know, I've come to sing for you. That's what I've come to do. You know, something like this. And Dylan's got fucking sunglasses on. You know, Dylan, and he gets the guitar. And Donovan's got some buddy frying his brains out. You know, so Dylan sings right in his face, Baby Blue. You know, it's all over. You must leave now. You know, all your six C6 sailors are rowing home. You know, it was heavy. The guy's like looking at him, you know, and Donovan's says, see this movie, it's a trip. He's a little effant, terrible in a way, but terrible French. But it's an interesting movie. There was another one that was allowed to come out, made the year after when he brought the band over, and it was electric, and it's called Eat the Document. Same guy, that Pennebaker, I believe. Okay, you're getting 7 inches, and you're playing them. Obviously, you know what the power of music is. What's happening, what ain't happening. What about ideas of wanting to do it?
Golly. I don't think that happened until the punk rock. Because, like, I was into, you know, in high school I was really into fusion and Led Zeppelin, pretty much.
So you went to concerts?
Yeah, it was like, you know.
Like me and Brother Matt.
Return of Forever and Brand X and you know, Weather Report and Led Zeppelin. and then all of a sudden punk rock came and I went, well, fuck that other shit.
You're just listening, right? And with punk you wanted to get involved and be naked.
Exactly. And I'd seen some punk rock shows where I couldn't.
Where was your first show?
Austin.
Okay.
Yeah. I saw a band called the Huns play at Raoul's.
Wow, I had a single by them, the yeah, Busy Kids.
Yeah.
And the sleeve was a little bigger than everybody else's.
Yeah.
And one cat was really into Leif Garrett or something. He had some
the guitar
poster.
Player. Is yeah, that? He had a Leif Garrett poster whenever they played.
The bass man for Urinals told me he lived with the Jonathan Christ or so. What was the singer's name? It was some trippy. No, maybe not that. But he became a Jesus freak.
Joel Polstead was the singer's name.
Was that it?
And then he went turned to like Christianity.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm thinking. Hardcore singer was Jonathan Christ. No, no, this guy who was in that, I didn't know his name, but I heard that he, because the Urinals bass guy lived with him when he lived in Texas.
Right.
And they were notorious. I mean, there was hardly any bands when those guys were doing gigs.
Yeah.
They were like early on. What's the other side? I can't remember, but Busy.
Glad he's dead.
Yeah. We're the Busy. That's
we are the Busy Kids.
And that's all he keeps singing. Yeah, that's all the lyrics. It's got this big kind of riff that's like taunting to erupt. But
and then there's Glad He's Dead. Fucking Red. Glad He's Dead. The fucking Red.
I remember the sleeve was bigger. It'd be with all my other ones, and it would be the bigger
and
one.
Kind of a crappy painting.
It was a painting of them, like.
Yeah, yeah.
And then them on the back, around the singer, him turned around.
Yeah, sort of a, you know, a better photograph. Yeah, they kind of, they made a big difference to me, because I never, it had never occurred to me that you would be intimidated by the band that you went to see. That just was foreign to me, and I really liked the idea.
The adversary.
Yeah.
And not just Nuremberg Rally.
Yeah.
But the other side. Yeah. Like the Stooges in those days. You know, 1, 2, fuck you pricks. Kind of stuff, yeah. Yeah, that tripped me out too about going to gigs, because it was all different at an arena. Although I saw some belige at the guy opening for T-Rex. They wanted him off. It was Albert Hammond. And he took a balloon. They're throwing shit at him. He took a balloon. And he said, "This is Mark Bolan." Popped it.
Was it there? Was it T Rex's show, or they opened?
Yeah, Albert Hammond opened for T Rex.
Oh, okay.
And but I'd never. You didn't see dudes getting booed off stage. Like something you heard about vaudeville or something. They threw vegetables. You know, you never thought that shit really happened.
Yeah.
You know? And. Yeah, when I went to Pumpkin Camp, I thought that it happened.
Wow.
It happened big time. I remember seeing this kind of wave band from New York called The Fast. Maybe it was Three Brothers, and Pat Smear was there watching. And he pulled the singer off the stage by his hair. And Patty Violent, this little barrage for him, pulled him right up. Whoa. Dude, the bags, too, the first gig I saw, the singer lady bounced a beer bottle off a dude's head in the crowd. It's like giving her shit.
Yeah, man, I didn't come to L.A. with music until 1986, maybe 87, and I was afraid to play here. I thought the audience is going to beat the fuck out of us.
Because of hardcore and that? Yeah, with the old punk, with 70s punk, there was some violence, but people weren't strong. It was sort of like when we were teenagers, before punk and the keggers and shit, and people ate a lot of red, so the fights were always in slow motion.
Ouch. Hey, man.
Look, we're going to play a little more music and get back to this.
irreversible suicide, irretrievable, believable, unclarified, inescapable, path to see the world collide. Okay, I'm petrified. And so, like a TV screen explodes. Every ATM has the evidence, and every touchscreen password and preference is malevolent. Blazing swords, blazing shields, burn the house and burn the schools. Broken glass, broken door, broken heart and chains of rules. Lock your door, light a flare, do what it is you need to do. Because wars, blazing disciples are on the move. If you see
white person I saw, they looked like they were pregnant. The goddamn payphone, he was rolling instead of walking. I'm like, son of a bitch. Isn't this a bitch? I'm like, wow, this is the secret that the American been hiding from everybody else. They got pregnant men in America. You can't think you got nobody your size in the country that's boxing. You put me on a scale, see, you're not even 112 pounds. The lightest person we have fighting is 112 pounds. And they walk around right at 120. Lost 8 pounds to fight. I said, look, now I want to fight. He said, no. I started begging him. I went back to that gym every day for 3 months. Thank you. gym. Back in love and everything. Clean up. After him, after the boys that do training. Sit in the corner and watch. Everything he teaches them, I go home and practice. They took me one night, from 7 p.m. to 2 a.m. to learn how to skip rope, like the guys in the gym.
Watt for Pedro show. You just heard Mary Had a Little Drug Problem by Scratch Acid. And ahead of that was Naked Track by GFR. A Pregnant Men in America by Alex Lambert and Travis Dickerson ahead of that. War's Blazing Disciples in front of that by The Eternals. And we started off with Unlike a Baptist by Scratch Acid. Only got a couple minutes here in the first hour. But the Huns was the big game changer.
The Huns.
From being passive fuge.
And the Hands and the Dicks. Really changed
for me. Gary Floyd told me that they actually had the band when they didn't have any songs. He said they were putting up flyers and shit because they got a song called Fake Bands.
Right.
And I asked him about that, and it was, you just said you had a band. You never played, and you put up flyers and shit. He said that's what they did at first. He never even wrote one song.
Called Toxic Shock, and we had flyers way before we ever had a band.
You did the same thing. Yeah. I guess that was kind of like one of the motivators. Like, man, we got to get it together.
Yeah, it's like a contract, man. Look, you made the poster. You got to have the band.
But he was bad. But I got that record, Live at Rebels. It's them on half and Big Boys on the other half.
Yeah.
And Dicks are so good on that one.
Well, man, it's
like, I like the other Big Boy one better, the one with the six.
Yeah, the Big Boy studio records were better.
That one where there's six. Maybe it was only a 12-inch 45, but it is bad. Yeah. Funky, trippy thing. And anyway, I think to be a Texas punk band in those days was balls out, way more balls out than to be a SoCal one.
Really? That's interesting.
I mean, we had trouble with the police and stuff, but I can imagine over there, just the culture thing. It was bad here, but I can imagine there.
Well, in Austin, it wasn't so bad because Austin is pretty much the only town in Texas that's forward-thinking, you know, and there'd been hippies there forever and stuff. I don't know. Houston, I wouldn't have wanted to be, you know, really Dallas. Bad what's going on down there.
Dallas, the Pistols actually played.
Yeah, well, they played, Dallas, San Antonio.
And San Antonio.
Yeah.
And I think they played Tulsa, too, out that way.
Yeah.
That was the most east they played, I think.
Yeah, Redneck Bars.
And it was Nerve Breakers.
Yeah.
Open for them in Dallas.
Yeah.
Man, we're at the end of the first hour, 2013, January 30th, the Dishwap Pedro Show. Guest David Yao, hold tight for hour two. January 30th, 2013, it's the second hour, Watt from Pedro's show.
We'll never be wrong. Greetings, fellow pilgrim. The recording provides serenity and enhanced coping skills and thousands of beneficial affirmations. Just turn down the volume control so that the whisper subliminal becomes inaudible. The messages will then pass to the control levels of mind unhindered, and the sense of relief and enhanced health and well-being becomes your daily living reality. It will stay with you. It will grow.
Green I was merely looking for
thing that you said. I'm a nervous wreck, whoa. Nervous wreck in my head. Really got me down. Really got me spinning around. Really got me turning around.
Go!
oldest man in the world.
Watch from Pedro show. Start off the second hour with Thumbscrews from Jesus Lizard. Self-help tapes after that from Deep in the Woods 66. Then we heard Runaway by Seasick. There's a band called that from the Bay Area. Oh. And When the Kettle Comes In, Dave Preston. Love Girl, Lonely Girls and Horses by the Parlor Flames. Nervous Wreck by Miss Malvis. She lives in Austin. And in fact, Scott Cross, a Parubu drummer, just had me play on two songs that he did with her. And then Sleepwalk and the Fear Song Camarillo by Kui.
Oh, cool.
And, we'll get to that because that's down the road. So, you see the Huns, you see the Dicks. You want to get in on it.
Yeah. I had a friend who had this SG copy bass. It was a K bass.
My first bass was a K SG copy.
Nice.
Or EB. They called them EBs.
The
guitars were SGs.
Right. But yeah, I think it was $40, and I got an amp with the speaker that was blown out and everything. But and I played bass in my first punk rock band.
And what was that?
When was that?
Was that Toxic Shock?
That was Toxic Shock. Yeah.
Tom Watson had a band called Toxic Shock.
Yeah, we were before.
Okay, sorry.
Or at least we made the posters.
You had the flyers up.
Yeah, we had the flyers up. We had the flyers up the day the singer and I were at a restaurant, and we saw the newspaper when they first came up with the term Toxic Shock, and we said, there's our band name.
Oh, right. It was something from Cotex's. People, ladies were getting sick.
Leaving them in or something.
Yeah.
Well, I think they were advertised. You could leave them in.
Yeah.
I don't think it was lazing out. I thought it was like some kind of progress they made, some innovation.
Yeah, let it marinate. It's not done yet.
You'll know when it's ready.
It'll tell you. And everybody else in the room.
Yeah, everybody else. They'll tell you.
Yeah, we had that little band. We had two singers originally. The beautiful girl named Carla Epler and Steve Anderson was singing. We had two singers.
Steve Anderson. Yeah. That's a trip because that was Tom Watson's singer.
Also for Toxic Shock? Really? That's
Parallel Wild Universe.
Yeah, totally. They changed their name later to Slovenly.
Okay.
First Slovenly Peter and then Slovenly.
Yeah.
Steve Anderson was a singer.
Wow.
Doppelgangers.
Yeah. I was, sort of a cross between Sex Pistols and Ramones kind of punk rock.
Ah, okay. Did you guys record?
Not very well played bass. I had a little triangular sticker I had on the tailpiece that indicated the E string, and that was the string I played.
The big one.
It was the one that sounded lowest.
Yeah. Right. Wow. Did you use fingers or a pick?
I used a pick.
It's all right.
But I also had flat wound strings because it didn't hurt my fingers so much.
Old style. Yeah, they're like pipe. Yeah.
No tack.
You remember the first gig?
Yes, I do.
Was it Pan Shitter? That's your first gig ever, right?
It was my first gig ever. It was at Duke's Royal Coach Inn. And our drummer, for some reason or another, couldn't be there. And so Pat Deason, who played drums for the Dicks, was going to sit in. I remember sitting in the alley before the show telling him, like, okay, the first song goes like, and the second song is like, I think we played like 8 songs and had a fucking blast, man. We were frolicking. I remember we were frolicking afterwards. It was one of the funnest times of my life.
Did you guys get to record?
Oh, we did record. And I think there's these weird, vinyl out available somewhere.
Was it one session?
One session with a guy named Dan Dryden at Earth and Sky Studios in Austin, and I think we borrowed the Dicks equipment to record.
Damn.
And
bucks.
Yeah, and it's honestly, it's pretty good. I'll email you. I've got MP3s. I can email you MP3s.
That would be great.
Yeah.
And it's your first tunes you ever wrote.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I only wrote one song on there. I wrote a song called "War Is Fun."
Yeah.
It's really pushing me
off. Is that your first tune, though?
Yeah.
My first tune was called "Mr. Bass King Outer Space." I was a teenager. And it was about playing some bass solo at a gig and blowing the rest of the band off the stage.
Nice.
You can tell how secure I was. Anyway, I never wrote another one until Punk came. I graduated to things like if Reagan played disco. So war is fun.
Yeah, it's kind of.
Okay, so how long did this band last?
It seemed like forever, but I think it was like 8 months.
8 months?
Yeah.
And something had to change.
Yeah, well, Steve quit, I think, after two shows, because he thought it was too much to have two singers, and he didn't want to sing at practice because he said it was going to ruin his voice, and then it just sort of dissolved. And
Mekons had two singers.
What's that?
The Mekons, and that band in England a long time.
Yeah.
I've never been in a riot, but they had two singers. There wasn't a lot of punk bands like that.
No, there weren't. There were a couple, but yeah, not a lot. And I thought it looked cool. I thought it worked.
But he just bailed.
Yeah, and Carla was really, really beautiful little young girl with really sort of Sid Vicious punk rock look.
Whoa.
So it looked really great, you know.
Yeah.
And she was really had a long neck and everything, really pretty girl.
So how did you take it? Damn, the band's gone.
Well, Carla was my girlfriend, too, so then the band broke up, and I don't know, I was doing so much acid and speed at the time, I don't remember exactly what happened.
Well, you went to another band, maybe Scratch Acid.
Yeah.
Now, how'd that start?
God, as I recall, I think that Ray, who had played drums in Sharon Tate's Baby and Jerry's Kids, was... Ray Washam, yeah, wanted to. I think he approached me about possibly doing a band, and Ray and Brett, who were in, had been playing with Jerry's Kids, not the Jerry's Kids from
Boston. But there was also one in Albuquerque too.
Really?
It was too good of a name.
Yeah.
You can't just base it on one town.
Yeah, and then we got to. And Steve Anderson was going to sing. And we had
He joined Slavoj instead.
Right. And David Sims was playing guitar, so we had two guitar players.
Oh, wow, he was a guitar man.
Yeah. And well, he wanted to be a guitar player. And then we played one show without Steve, and then just sort of kicked him out of the band. And I switched from bass to vocals, and David switched from guitar to bass.
Okay. So you only did a couple.
I think we did one show.
Only one gig with the old lineup, the original. Who came up with the name?
I believe I did.
Yeah. Apropos of the life.
Yeah. Well,
I did one gig on L. It was a Minuteman gig. I didn't know we were supposed to play. And they said, hey, get down there. We're going on. And I was like, oh, God. So I ran there.
You ran to the...
So I gave like 2 miles with the bass out of my mind. I get there. It was here, down on 23rd and Pacific, Brother Matt. It used to be called Capone's and 3B's.
Oh, yeah.
The Blue Viking had a lot of names. Somebody got murdered on the roof. Somebody told me they had bad luck. Anyway, we're up there. I didn't know any of the parts. But just when D. Boone and Georgie would start, I'd just start hitting the strings with them. And they'd stop, I'd stop. And they'd go, and I'd go. All the lights. The sound felt like it was a toothpick. It sounded like my amplifier was a gigantic... Well, the bass was like a toothpaste tube, too, and I was just, it was coming out the end, you know, and I was just chopping it off with my shoulder up on the tube, you know, and did different lengths.
Uh-huh.
Well, here's a long part, here's a short part, you know. That's because I was out of my mind. When I ran back home, I ran up 22nd Street, the steep as hill, because there was a lot of...
But it's freakish how...
It wasn't good hell. There was a lot of stimulant.
Strychnine.
Yeah, but stimulant, too. To make it like, you know, it was strong, but it was actually stimulant, methamphetamine, I don't know.
Right. But it's crazy how quickly you guys got so good at your...
Well, this was only one gig. I never played that way. I couldn't remember anything. I couldn't think of anything. they were playing pretty good. I just didn't know where I was. It just started with them and stopped. It's funny. Nobody told me I was fucking up. I didn't play any parts.
You weren't fucking up.
I was squeezing out chunks of toothpaste. That's what the bass, it sounded like. So I know a lot of dudes did Al, and I know the more you did Al, the kind of weaker it was. So that's why I kind of spaced it out, because it'd be all strong and just use my brains and listen to Richard Meltzer on the radio. Or records. We would buy records and never listen to them until 8L. And then you'd have no idea. Like that Prayer on Fire birthday party.
Uh-huh.
I remember never, you know, we just, whoa, this looks like a good album cover. You know, nobody wrote about those things. So right. We would buy them by the name of the band or the album cover. And then we'd wait for the weekend when we'd have time off and eat L and listen to them. They'd be like total freakouts.
Yeah.
I remember that Cabaret Voltaire one called Cut Up or Mix Up or something.
Yeah,
we just like
chrome stuff on that.
Yeah, you know, you didn't have any idea what was going to come. You never heard the tunes. You didn't know where they were going.
Yeah, take you. It would really take you.
Wow. And then the last time I used it was in '83. It was at a gig where Einstein and Zanoi Bouton came and played here in the desert. And that was the last time. That was a trip. And I never ate it again. It took too long. Took too much time.
Yeah.
Last 10 hours in, your mind would be like wrung out for another.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah, sure.
So I never did again, but I'm glad I did it. So Scratch has said, we played some songs here on the show, so I know you guys recorded. You did tours. I mean, that's your first full on band, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
How would you sum it up?
How did we sum it up?
How would you?
Golly, no regrets. It was so much fun. I remember we went to Europe in the winter of '86, and that blew my mind. I couldn't believe. I mean, there was, you know, you'd been there, right?
With Flag,
and like
yeah.
Black Flag had been there, and Sonic Youth, and
we went
Surfers,
in '83,
but not a whole lot of
U.S. bands. Yeah, you're
yeah,
right.
And not a lot
I think
of,
that when we went, the only ones before us was Kennedy's.
Right. But that was that freaked me out. I couldn't believe. It was such an honor to go play in Europe.
That was our first time there. That's how we got to see. Was playing in a band, playing
yeah.
in a band.
But it was a trip. And
half of it was West
friends.
Germany.
What's that?
Half of it was West Germany. Right?
Yeah, yeah. And I've
people
still,
don't
I
know that
my
in the old days
when you know when the wall was still up. And I think of my passport as a real that particular passport as a real.
You got
DDR. It's like a trophy almost because of, I mean, it's got extra pages added and, you know, stuff from East
DDR.
Germany.
DDR. Yeah. I had them stamps. They were two color. They were fancy.
Yeah, very cool.
But people don't realize, like, half the Germany, West Germany was getting a lot of money from the U.S. And when you toured a Europe tour, half of it would be there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we saw a lot of there. But so Scratch Acid for you was like, yeah, the opening of the music trip.
Yeah.
And you said it was scary coming playing here in SoCal, huh?
It was, although, well, we played at Fenders in Long Beach.
Yeah, Long Beach.
Yeah, and I remember we were going to be opening for Peter Murphy. And then we got here. And we
Is that the Bauhaus here?
Yeah. And I thought, okay, that's cool. And then when we got here, we found out there's some other band playing between us and them, and it was a band called Jane's Addiction. I was going like, what the fuck is this shit? You know, why do we have to play first? Who's this? And, you know, and Jane's Addiction played and stuff. And
he had a band before that called Psycom.
Psycom?
That band played with. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
They were synthesizers.
Yeah, and then I think we played the Whiskey. And then went up to San Francisco, played the I-Beam and stuff. But
so that was your first time out west?
Yeah, first and only.
Well, for Scratch Acid.
Yeah.
Wow. Was that a trip?
It was.
Because in Austin, you probably had this whole idea of what the West Coast is like.
Well, I was just afraid that, it was all they were all going to beat us up.
It was going to be thug.
Yeah, I figured we'd start the set, and then they'd just beat us up. You know, I mean, I'd seen Decline.
Oh, that's so, right. That's right.
So
that's
I just figured that's the way it
that's always the way it goes.
And you know, we hate they hate us, we hate them. I just figured like that's the way it always is. Any show, Southern California.
They're gonna fly. You.
And I'm a little guy, they're gonna kill me.
Yeah. Yeah, that I can imagine, yeah, decline. That probably set the thing. Yeah. Kind of mindset, the template. And the hardcore did have some, there's some wild shit.
Yeah.
I remember we were playing a gig with Flag and Fear up in Hollywood. And Durf, the bass man, for Fear, spit on some dude. That dude just pulled him down and cracked his head with punches. Had to have a cup on his head draining into it. Yeah. There were some rough cats.
Yeah.
Kind of jock guys got in the scene. And, much different than the 70s. Hardly any ladies. All young guys ready to go.
Yeah.
Kind of happened again when alternative came, but they had backward baseball bats.
Well, also, because the punk rock that I got so excited about in Austin, right, you know, there would be little bits of violence and stuff in the audience, but it was mostly just because you had so many people in a small space going so wild. But if somebody fell down, you know, you'd help them up and shit.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then shit like the HB strut came around where it's all this orchestrated, like, run in circles and, you know, punch people. It's like, fuck that, you know, fuck that. And that's what I figured was going to be going on.
Well, in the old days, I think a lot of those young guys, they'd be playing Pop Warner. They'd be getting that out another way. Yeah. It just had just channeled into, like, music scene. Yeah, yeah. It was ridiculous, and it went over to other stuff too, because you know, where you could wear long hair like Slayer and stuff.
Yeah.
But they would do this. I remember seeing a gig at the Civic. It was like a 3,000 young man spin cycle of the dryer. You know, this one big spinning, just punching the shit out of each other. But these guys played so fast. Yeah, I imagine it. And what they call it, shred or shred metal or something. Yeah, the land of the genre and the dance moves and all this. Yeah, pogo was more up and down. It wasn't so much left or right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it could get sloppy, but it'll be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. More.
More girls in pogo.
Yeah, it was more girls, that's for sure. I mean, even the girls that were there, they'd be way on the side, man. They didn't get involved.
Well,
nowadays, when it came back in the 90s, I would see girls doing that shit. But in the 80s, when it got heavy, it turned into a total...
Austin, there were a pretty fair number of girls, and there were a lot of gays. There were a lot of gays in bands, in the punk rock bands in Austin.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is...
Yeah, well, the Hollywood scene had it, too.
Really?
I don't know about the HB scene so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was in Hollywood.
They were a lot more closet.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But so, like, the ladies were like, what, more roller derby or something?
That kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, sure. So they're a little tough stuff. I saw that with the Riot Girl in the 90s when it came back. These girls wouldn't be. But the pits changed, too. I mean, when you're talking about, man, there were some jock guys at the gigs. Remember, punk rock was weird. Guys who didn't fit in and weren't that strong. I remember seeing TSOL for the first time. And you guys got suntans. You're strong and good looking. What's this? Why are you here? But they had issues with the parents. And that thing was different. You know, it was kind of like hip society, right? Hippie.
I think so, man.
It was different than just trying to make like Dada or something. I think that was more the 70s punk. The other thing was kind of like, because nobody lived at home, hardly. You know, nobody was that young in the scene here. I don't know about Austin, but we didn't have teenagers in the first.
Yeah. Well, I think we did and didn't, but... And I might be fooling myself, but I swear to God, I know kids are having a blast these days, and they always have, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I genuinely don't think that there has been a time... Except for maybe when rock and roll was becoming rock and roll, that there was a time as exciting in music as when the punk rock was starting to explode here, because there had been it was completely different.
Yeah, definitely knew that you're taking part in some kind of magical moment.
I feel that way. I honestly do.
Yeah, I do too. That's the way we felt.
Yeah.
It was minority, it seemed, but that was okay.
I gotta pee.
His head's over there.
Okay.
And Brother Matt, time for the spin cycle.
Cool.
That was a great cue. Thank you, Mr. Yao. Perfect timing. Watt from Pedro. Brother Matt, thanks so much for your spin segment talking here about the old days with David Yao here. How long you been a SoCal man now?
Just over 10 years.
10 years. But he doesn't know our old days. Wow. 10 years.
I love it here, man.
You were in Indiana, right?
Yeah, yeah. I was sort of Chicago, and then I bought a house in Indiana.
Part of Indiana that's close to Chicago.
Yeah, 50 miles south of Chicago, yeah. Okay. God, you got a memory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Winners.
What were we talking about? Huh?
About you in SoCal and days before your time here.
Yeah, yeah. And, man, I tell you what, I love this town. I think I'll probably be here till checkout time.
Me too.
I reckon.
You know, I like visiting and stuff, but I like living.
Yeah.
Other pads. The bungee cord snaps me back.
Poing!
We're back. Hey, you might hear some better sound here because I got it all figured out. I was a dumb fuck and had the whole thing going through the Mac Barbie microphone thing. Really. So, it sounds like some motherfucking battleship voice with Bogart on Mr. Yao here. I apologize for that big time. And this third hour that's coming up, you're going to get more of him and less of the fucking Vavoom. January 30, 2013 edition, Wap Pedro Show. Hold tight for hour three. January 3rd, 2013, third hour, Wap from Pedro Show.
Mike wrote, man, it's such a great thing for it, and his piece and Alex from Einstürzende Neubauten those two pieces alone make it worth the price. They're so good. So great.
Yeah, I was very honored to be asked. And I just thought they were, you know, why I got into the scene in the first place. That was just their take on it, which was the way it was supposed to be. Everybody gets a cue that it's safe to go crazy, and then they bring it. And I just really dug it.
Well, also your language. You know, the English you speak isn't like the English that...
A lot of people think everyone in Pedro talks.
But it reads like a Dada poem almost. It's almost like you can't tell exactly. Like you finish reading it, and it's like looking at an abstract painting going, I can't tell what that is, but I can feel what it is. I can't see what it is, but I know what it is. Kind of thing. That's really great.
Can't quite nail it, but I dig on the art of it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah,
Pedro speak, but it ain't really Pedro. You know, people ask me, "Where's the other Mike Watts?" Like, there's a whole town of us.
Oh God, what a nightmare! Imagine go to a bar. What did you say?
Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Kind of colony, crazy man colony. Okay, we start off third hour with World, great Jesus Lizard song, man. Lost in the Fog by Brother Steve McKay. Stooges sax man, I'm on the bass on that. Sunset Beach, they just annexed themselves to Orange County. Brother Matt, in case you were thinking paddling out there. Then we had Mr. Kennedy Don't Need No Cat Scan by Richard Howard Brown, Commissar by Dispione, and finally Chicky Chicky Bang Bang by Fearless Leader. That's got Bob Lee on the drums there. Mr. Yao, so on the musical journey, we were at the scratch acid part. And you had done several tours. You found out about Europe. You found out about the West Side, the U.S., probably toured other parts of the U.S. too. And you did several recordings.
Yeah. And, a couple of them were good.
Yeah. We played some at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
And, pick it up from there. How did it evolve, your second band?
The one after that?
No. It's Toxic Shock. Tom Watson's band was first.
I thought we covered that.
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
So I'm, no. I'm talking about the second band here, Scratch Acids. How did it evolve from, like, that gig at Fender's Ballroom?
Playing
the whiskey and
that tour when we came out here in whenever 87 was our final tour because we started having some interpersonal relationship problems and by the time we got to Minneapolis, which was like maybe the fifth to last show on the tour.
Yeah.
There were some serious problems, and some of the folks, I don't want to mention names in the band, there was some drama. And so we finished the tour, but it was not very easy. And then when we got home, I think it was kind of like, it was clear that we were done. It kind of dissolved.
Like in Italian, they say, "I fatta," we did it.
Yeah, that's right. Prego.
E fatta. Or e fatta, really. But, it had run its course. But
yeah.
Not all the cats. Because you would go on to play.
Well, yeah. Well, David Sims, our bass player, I think we were roommates at the time. No, we weren't. Now, I was living with my girlfriend, and Dwayne, who had played guitar in some bands in Detroit, and then he moved down to Austin, and he was with Cargo Cult, with Biscuit from the Big Boys, and some other really, really good players. But they were kind of like jazz punk, and they confused a lot of us Austin punk guys.
Yeah.
We were impressed, but confused.
Okay.
And Dwayne had some recording time, and he said, "Hey, would I play bass on a couple of his tunes?" And I said, "Okay, sure." And he played them for me, and I said, "Man, I can't play that stuff. get David Sims. And so we got David Sims to do it. The next thing you know, we were ready to start practicing.
Because the band didn't start with the drumming.
Right, we had a drum machine. We had, I think, an Alesis HR-16 drum machine.
Now, did this have anything to do with
Big Lax?
You, Mr. Albini?
Not really. Okay. I mean, you know, we were aware of other bands with drum machines, but I think it was more a question of sort of economy. Yeah. I mean, we didn't have a drummer and we needed one, so we just used this.
Right.
And
who
also
programmed it?
David Sims did the majority of the programming. I tried to add some blues to it by like slowing down the hi-hat. He had the hi-hat. I was going. I said, "Don't do that." And yeah, we kind of messed around for a while in Austin with the three of us, and then David and I moved to Chicago, and David joined Rape Man with Albini and Ray from Scratch Acid, and that was a short-lived project. It was great, stupid name, but really great band. yeah, and then Dwayne came up to do we wanted to just record the songs that we had as a project.
Yeah, and not gigs, just proj.
Yeah, and sort of coerced Touch and Go into releasing it. I don't think they were very excited about it, but they thought that, you know, if we got a drummer, possibly, you know, we could do something. And
but in the meantime, we'll put this out.
Yeah. And that's Corey, what Pure was, our first record called Pure.
Yeah. Was Corey the boss?
Was he the boss? Well, he was, yeah, he was running Touch and Go.
He was bass man from Necros.
Yes, bass man from the Necros. And a wonderful, wonderful guy. Really, really honest and ethical and great to deal with and stuff. At that time, it was he and his wife, Lisa, too. It was a mom and pop company. And, then we called, I had seen Mac McNeil, I saw him play with 86 in Austin. And he blew my mind. I was just going, what the fuck? John Bonham's dead. Where'd that guy's leg come from? And, after talking about a few Chicago drummers, we got in touch with Mac. He liked the tape that we sent him, and he came out. And the next thing you know, he's like in the band, and we started touring like crazy.
Yeah. And that was a trippy time too, right?
I think so. Aren't they usually?
Well, you didn't really have a lot of big labels wanting to sign bands in the older days.
Yeah, yeah.
It changed.
Yeah, this is 89.
Yeah. And especially coming on the early 90s, much different than the older days.
Yeah.
As far as those cats. Everybody was getting signed.
I'm sorry?
Everybody was getting signed by big labels.
Yeah.
Early 90s, because of this thing called alternative.
Yeah. Which I don't really care for that term so much. Plan B. Like, no, I think Bruce Springsteen is Plan B.
They just didn't like that punk word. They're afraid of it. They always hated that word. That's what they meant by Green Day made things safe.
Is that what that you reckon?
Maybe. That you heard on, what you say, an award show?
Some TV music award show, yeah.
Because they really didn't want to use that word for so long. They'd invent these other words.
I know, but if they somehow brought it back into the mainstream, the fact that the punk rock is in the mainstream, well, that's just fine. Have a glass of milk.
Oh, it's so funny. It's so funny. But so that's why I said it was kind of different. You know, from the scene I was in, it was kind of different.
Yeah.
It was, I wouldn't say totally Mersh or something, but it was just different than those other days.
And more people knew about gigs. More people were coming to gigs.
They did. Well, bands like you and Black Flag and so many, you know, even Scratch Acid and stuff had sort of kind of, you know, flattened the grass out some to where people can get through.
Yeah, right. And so Jesus Lizard, in a way, I mean, kind of what Pharaohs had from what Minutemen did, maybe Jesus Lizard had from what Scratch Acid did. You know, there was groundwork we laid out that we didn't really see as much in our time, but it kind of paved out a little bit more.
For sure.
And that's because, you know, it got bigger, more people knew about it, people weren't as tripped out and afraid of it.
But there still were the really funny, like, hillbilly kind of things.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Have you been to Tal's Art Bar? Tal's Dart Bar in Hattiesburg?
Like, Tal with cutoffs.
That was hilarious. We played there, and the stage was an L-shaped thing with a little bit, a chintzy little railing that, you know, a girl could break. And
it broke before.
And I remember they only had, I think, 3 mics. And so they gave one to me for vocals, then they had one for the snare, and then one, and the sound man couldn't make it, so they sent his cousin in. And he had a microphone sort of over the ride cymbal and the floor tom, about 2 feet above the floor tom. And I said to the guy, like, what's that microphone for? And he goes, that there is for the big floor tom drum. And I said, okay, cool. Why is it so high? And he goes, that way you pick up some of the cymbal. And, you know, for those of you who don't know so much about miking techniques and stuff, you don't really want that much cymbal in your drum mic.
And there was a trailer park next to it. There was a shooting at the thing the night we played. It got rowdy. Played Tal's a couple times. Yeah, there was still stuff like that.
Yeah. Which really is entertaining.
There was stuff like that in the old days, too. And I could tell you some stories. But, yeah, it did keep existing. But for, like, big towns and stuff, and you could tell it, there was kind of a change. You guys went on to another label, too.
Yeah. Well, and about 9 years later, 8 or 9 years later, we went to Capitol. And that was... I think we made the right decision in retrospect. It wasn't a popular decision. It was weird that, like, people who liked our band before then suddenly had a problem because we were putting records out on a different label.
Yeah.
I think that particularly that first record we put out on Capitol called Shot, I think it's a pretty good record.
It's a good shot.
You know, and we, like, you know, I'm certainly not ashamed of it, but yeah, it was weird. We got a lot of flack for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
The smallest part. It sounded like dropping a BB.
That's the cue to play some more music.
A rice grain on some paper. Pants are around
so
my ankles.
We got Michael from the Killdozer to thank for that. That was a moment.
You should have Michael on the show.
Yeah, via Skype or something. We interviewed dude through Skype.
Okay.
Like, does he live here now?
Oh, he's been in L.A. longer than I have.
Is that right?
Yeah. I'll put you in touch.
Fuck. Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah, that would be good. And he's a genius, man.
I'd love to have him aboard when I get back from tour in April.
Excellent.
Okay, we start that chunk of music off with Jesus Lizard doing Fly on the Wall. I've got to be a fly on the wall here, Mr. Yao. Actually, we should have had the thing going during the music and stuff because he's got excellent spiels. Like, you should not be afraid of acknowledging your influences.
That's what Dave Markey said when he was here. We should have cameras rolling for the behind-the-scenes conversations.
Oh, that wasn't on the air?
No.
Oh.
music. And then we heard Police on My Back by Upsetters, Tin Soldiers by the Father Figures. That's what I always wanted to call my punk band. So, all that touring, having to deal with switching to a big label controversy with the old fans. What was your take on the Jesus Lizard experience for you?
Of course, it was more than about that. That was reductionism.
Yeah, it was a terrible, terrible time, and I hate anything having to do with it and the people involved with it. Okay. I hope that they all die a slow death. Is that clear?
Yeah.
Now, come on, what? It was like most of the things that have happened in my life, was so much fun, I can't believe it. It was great.
Yeah.
The hardest part was as time went along and Mac got married and he had kids, Mac, our drummer, who's the nicest guy who ever stepped foot on earth.
I can tell.
Life got really, really hard for him. And
For touring.
And I mean, if I don't have any kids. If I did, I wouldn't want to miss a day of them growing up.
Sure.
And so I don't blame him for taking off, but it just got more and more difficult with dividing his band time with his family time, and eventually he couldn't do it anymore. But we had signed a 3-record contract with Capitol, and we'd only done 1 record.
Yeah.
And so if we had broken up at the time, we would have owed them a lot of money. We saw that coming before we signed that Capitol contract, and Mac had a clause where he was allowed to leave the band. He called it the fuck you clause. I called it the Mac, this is giving you an out clause. But in any event, we had to at least do another record, otherwise we would have been fucked. And so Mac asked that we have this guy Jim Kimball take over.
Yeah.
And after Mac left, it just became a job.
I saw him in Laughing Hyenas.
That's correct.
Later
yes.
With Mule.
With Mule and even Dennis and Kimmel Trio.
That's right.
And he played with Fetus some, and he played some with Firewater, and he played some with the Rebecca Gates thing. And
wow.
Yeah.
Is he still playing?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. You just wonder. So I was...
He's hiking right now.
Okay. He had a trippy style. I can remember him. Yeah. Like a little bird. Because he'd throw his elbows in the air when he played. When he did flams, it was like a little bird trying to take off. So, Jim Kimball, I always very... most dudes throw their hair around. He threw elbow. Little bird. Little wing. So you did that album... The guy with the beetle? No, Shot is with the beetle.
Shot has the beetle on it, yeah.
Like a rhinoceros.
Yeah, exactly.
Biggest bug in the world from Africa. It's a biggie. And so it kind of ran out of gas.
I think...
Without Mac.
To a degree, yeah, I do think we were kind of running out of gas. We did another record. We recorded by Andy Gill, who played with Gang of Four. And that was a blast to record because Andy had such cool ideas. And we ended up with, I think, a more textural record than we'd ever even thought of. I mean, I like that record. I think there's some really good songs on it, but... Yeah, I'm glad we didn't make another one after that. I think we would have run completely out of gas.
Okay.
We would have just released a record with nothing on it. That would be cool.
Yeah. I remember going over to Thurston's once and he had a record where they put it into the sleeve. This is tell you about a collector. Yeah, they put it in the sleeve before it was dry or cool. So it stuck to the fucking paper.
Ah.
Who would get a record like this? You can't play it. Thirst.
Goo. It was just goo.
And after that, God, we're running out of time, but you had a thing called Quee with no bass.
With no
Not
bass.
Not only were you no longer playing it, you wouldn't even have one in the band.
Yeah. Well, that was Matt Kronk and Paul Christensen and a couple of guys from Minneapolis who had relocated to here. And they'd had the band for 6 years before I joined.
Okay.
Just the two of them. And then I kind of came along just to do a couple of songs with them and enjoyed it so much. And I had no intent at the time of joining a band. But I, you know, hooked up with them, and it was a blast.
Because you came to SoCal and started doing graphic?
Yeah, yeah. I was doing photo retouching. It's, yeah.
Yeah. But you also got into art. I was at benefit, you know, the Tohoku tsunami and that crap. Well, they did some benefits for it, and I saw one of your works at that benefit to get money up for those people that got hurt by that.
Oh, yeah, for the Art Against the Art from the Ashes people had organized that thing for, yeah. Yeah, well, I went to art school. I'd been doing drawings and paintings forever, and that kind of came up more.
Why didn't they come up on the, they're not on the Jesus Lizard albums?
Well, it did a little bit. I mean, I laid most of those records out. Okay. David Sims did Pure, and he did Goat. I did all the other ones, and you know, I did some paintings and some artwork for a few of like the 7 inches and like the Lash EP and stuff like that. But yeah, I was mostly focused on, you know, music, and then when I moved out here,
yeah.
Several years ago, I had this guy at an art gallery said, "Hey, I heard you draw." And I said, "Uh-huh." He said, "You want to have a show?" And I went, "Okay." He said, "Well, can you do like 30 pieces in 4 months?" And he said he wanted something big. And so I did a 6-foot by 8-foot painting, the biggest painting I've ever done. It was a blast and did all this shit. And so I've kind of gotten back into that. And I do, now I have a little website. I don't, this is going to sound gross. I have my little website called getfaced.net. And I brought bumper stickers for you.
Get Faced. People, that's getfaced.net.
Go yeah, there. And you send like a picture of you or your friend or your dog or whatever. And it's essentially, it's commissioning me to do a portrait. And I do sort of a fucked up a line drawing of the picture colored in with photographic textures, essentially.
Wow. Yeah. I might be sending my face in.
I've done a.
There's an album cover.
I did. You know Dave Ketching, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I did a really one. I'm really really happy with of Dave, where he's got these sunglasses on, so you can't see his eyes, but he's holding a frying pan. That's why I put the two eyes in the frying pan.
Eyes on. The yolks. The yolks on you. So, but back to Cui a little bit. They had to kind of stop, right? The guitar man had a.
Yeah, he got some serious drug problems, and it turned into kind of an asshole. And since then, I'm really happy to say, and it warms the very cockles of my heart, that he's back full steam, like clean and sober, and the nicest, most considerate guy. It's really, really beautiful. And so
you are going to do Cui music.
I'm not. I mean, they're reforming, and I did a few songs with them, like at the very, very end of 2012.
Because early in the show, we played you doing some bass for them.
Right, with the Fear song.
Something in Roma. Yeah, first you do like Johnny and Santo, Sleepwalker? Sleepwalk?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Matt started out with that. That's right. I forgot about that. I forgot about that.
I got to do a Fear song a few months ago for the. They did a tribute to Repo Man, and I got to do Let's Have a War.
Oh, nice.
With all my organ-based drum trio, so it was totally like Fear, but it was a variation. It was still Bledge.
Yeah.
That song is. Fear was like punk rock Beethoven, man. It was intense.
It really was.
Kind of hard to play.
Well, that, God, a musician stuff's crazy.
Yeah, it's
that first record, the Fear record, that's like the, to me, that's.
The gigs, too. It was funny, too, because people would say, at the gigs would say, this was the older Hollywood people, they're heavy metal. And it wasn't heavy metal to me. It was strange. It was their own music.
Yeah.
It was trippy.
Yeah, they were just freaking out because the guitar player could really play, so he must be metal.
But the rhythms, too, were really strange.
Fucked up. Spit sticks is like...
And then he got these electric drums, these Simmons, these
really?
Synthesizers. Oh, yeah, and so he had them for toms. So the attack, you know, was like a drum, man. Hit you in the gut, you'd be at a gig and they'd be coming through the PA and be like, boop, 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 boop. Big old fucking gut punches.
Did it sound good?
It was intense. It was physical. It wasn't just sound.
Wow.
You felt these fuckers.
Wow.
Because the attack was so quick. It wasn't like an acoustic drum. They're a wild band.
it's funny. They, for a lot of people, just a cartoon or anything, but if you really got into the music, they were really a singular band.
They really were. And they were, man, I remember my ex-wife just did not get it. You know, like
the jokes between the songs.
Oh, yeah, or just the lyrics, where it's like, you know, hatred is purity, weakness is disease. I thought that was pretty fucking funny, because they don't mean it. It's tongue in cheek. You know, chill out, sit back down. You know, but
give guns to the queers.
Steer the money from your mother, buy a gun. You know, it was hilarious.
That was a sticker that Unicorn Record Company made Black Flag put on their album. MCA, who distributed, wouldn't distribute it.
What was the sticker?
You know, this is anti-family or some shit.
Oh, yeah.
The Damaged album.
Those stickers helped everybody.
Yeah, you know.
These people they should have just said, buy this.
Right. There was a lot of weird stuff. Remember the clean up the lyrics thing? PMRC,
yeah. Yeah, with all kinds of people like Frank Zappa and what's the guy from Twisted Sister coming out and getting articulate. And
speaking up for us.
Yeah.
And, yeah, trying to clean it up.
Tipper Gore.
Yeah. So you did some songs with Quee, but you don't really have any music plans or what?
I don't. I'm an actor now.
Are you doing something?
Oh, I've got my solo album coming out.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I don't. Can't say anything. Don't know what I'm talking about.
Because somebody, I heard.
Okay. I think, well, I'm probably going to have a solo record coming out in a few months. I really have no idea if that's going to happen or not.
But if something weird like that, can you come on the show and we can talk about it?
Absolutely.
Come back to Pedro?
Cool. Yeah. Well, I started on this thing years ago, like when that guy I mentioned earlier, Alex Hacka from Neubauten.
Yeah.
He's a dear friend, and he spent some time at my house when I lived in Indiana, and he showed me sort of the rudiments of Pro Tools, because I'm not a musician. I know diddly squat about music. I don't know what a scale is. No, I didn't. And
at the right string.
And about a week later, I met Mike Patton, who, with Greg Workman, was running Ipecac Records, and he took me by the shoulders, and he said, you're going to do a solo record, and I'm putting out whether you like it or not. I went, okay, great. And so I started working on this thing for years, but never really did anything. And then
it sits,
shit,
right?
Yeah. But it's, well, there's real instruments and there's samples and stuff, but it's not, if you're cognizant of the crap that I've done musically in the past, that's not a clue to what this sounds like.
I think that's okay.
I think it's better. Thank you. Me too.
Yeah. I think it's okay.
Yeah.
Life's a journey. It ain't reruns.
That's right.
I love Lucy World. It is.
That's right.
Mickey, this week, the mayonnaise.
The mayonnaise?
Remember they had to fill like 500 jars of mayonnaise? She's always having some drama. Talk about your drama. I had every show, but you're going to work it out in a half hour,
yeah,
so
yeah.
It's okay.
Vitamin to Vegemin.
Yeah.
Tastes just like candy.
So I can't wait to hear this, but when it does come, please come on the show again.
I would love to.
And we'll have a bigger talk, and not just all the good stuff happening when the music's going.
I would love to, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on the record.
Yeah.
Because there's some stupid
shit on
there.
We'll play the whole fucking
there.
Thing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming aboard here in Love Grotto. Pleasure Point.
I can't tell you how honored I am.
Yeah. Well, truly our pleasure, right, brother?
Yeah, very cool having you.
All right. Well, I'll see you hopefully in a couple months, if not before.
Okay. Well, I got tour coming. Next week, we'll have a show with Bob Lee.
Oh, cool.
But then I got to go away for 2 months. Got a tour with a couple Italian guys and then some Stooges. And then I'll come back.
We'll see how far
Mr. Patton got this. I mean, that guy, if he asked you to do a record, I mean, he's a music man. So thanks for taking him up on that.
Well, Ipecac is not putting
it
out.
A long time ago, like, because there's, you know what Orson Welles said? No wine before it's time. That's what the $2 screw-on.
I remember that. Yeah.
Do you remember that? I think
the
it was,
commercial, of course.
What was it, Musan Brothers? Or
yeah. Mogan David. Well, no. Might as well have been.
Paul Musan. It was some guy.
And that is weird, like, to have one of the greatest
artists
in filmmaking history going, we will sell wine, no wine, before it's time.
But in between, it wasn't that, no wine. Before it's time. There's drama in it. He put some stuff in there somehow. One time I saw him at Pink's. I got to meet him once.
Wow.
Really?
He had a chili dog in each hand.
He was eating he was having a Roseanne bar or something like that.
Hey, young man. That's what he called me.
Nice.
I was a young man. Thank you, Mr. Yao. Brother Matt, great to have you aboard. We'll look forward to your next visit and your music.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's been January 30th, 2013 edition of Waffle Pedro Show.
Good night.
Keep your powder dry.